This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Welcome back to the show. We go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is an NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. He's a former NFL coach. He's a former NFL scout. He played quarterback at Wisconsin. In that quarterback position group, I don't like saying room, Nate, was a guy named Russell Wilson. He's Nate Tice. Hello, Nate. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Nate. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Yes, I was in the room, the group, with Russell Wilson at Wisconsin. But yeah, it's a lot of formers there. I just noticed that. I noticed that a lot of times when I get introduced on shows, it really sounds like Khaleesi from Game of Thrones. It's like Mother of Dragons, Breaker of Chains. It just keeps going and going and going. But no, thanks for having me so much.
I'll make sure everything's updated. Currently, NFL writer for Yahoo Sports and host of the Football 301 podcast.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you can find me on Yahoo writing a lot of words. A lot of words all over the place.
That's good. See, you're a busy guy. That's a really good thing. I like that.
Yeah. Work is good. I know. I've learned that. It's when no one talks to you. It's like when you're a player, too. If the coaches aren't talking to you, that's not a good thing. Same with the media world. If people are asking you to talk, that must be okay.
Yeah, there you go. So tell me this. We're sitting here in Cleveland. I don't know if you know this. Browns have been looking for a quarterback since Bernie Kosar was here. And they're still looking for a quarterback. If you're the Browns and you're looking for a quarterback and the one you have is really highly paid, not able to play, and when he did play, wasn't playing very well, is this the time to have the second pick in the draft?
No. It's a short answer. I'll get right there. And you hope that whatever quarterback they find next has as much, as much as Bernie has been around with the Browns organization afterwards, with the fans and everything. It's like, man, if you just become a decent quarterback in Cleveland, you can have a long career afterwards too in the area. But no, this draft class really to me is a lot like the 2019 draft class with Kyler Murray ended up being QB1 in the number one pick. There's a flawed but very good, I think, quarterback prospect at the top. And then I really do think it's just a one quarterback class that I'm comfortable taking in the first round, much more the top 10, the top 5. I view the rest of the group of guys, and I'm including Shedeur Sanders, Jackson Dart, Tyler Shuck. I'm high on Riley Leonard, but these are all guys that I really consider more day two guys, day two dart throws. And quarterbacks always get inflated. Guys, last year, a couple guys, I think, got inflated into the first round, and I understand the contract aspects of that. But the thing is, if you take a guy in the first round, you put one you know, round one next to their name, you are anointing them. Even if you say you're not, you are. So that's why I get really tough when I'm saying, when I think a guy is getting looked at the top 10 or top 15. Mm-hmm. I start really picking apart their flaws, and that's just me. I can only imagine how teams are doing this with interviews and everything. So when I look at this class, this is not really the exciting class to have. You know, it wasn't like last year where I thought the top three guys were all valid top 10 guys. Even if I actually have some issues with Jane Daniels, still thought he should be an easy top 15 pick. So that was this class. It's like Cam Ward. And then after that, it's the other positions where my eyes go as opposed to the QB2. So that is kind of just maybe not the most exciting class if you're looking for a quarterback, and especially if you're in the top five like Cleveland is right now.
All right. So I keep asking this question and trying to figure it out. Is it just bad at the top of the class? Because everyone is crushing the quarterbacks. And I've seen some pretty good play out of the quarterbacks that are coming out of college right now. But are we saying this is a bad quarterback class? And I think I'm reading into what you just said, because the upper echelon quarterbacks aren't like of normal upper echelon years. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's not as top heavy as you usually have. I would say you usually get two guys that are justifiable first round picks, and then you start squinting and you maybe get three, you know, potentially four. That is, you know, I would say a typical class to me, a quarterback class to me, is maybe that Stroud, Bryce Young, Richardson class, where you got maybe two guys that everyone could kind of consider as locks, which was Stroud and Young. You got the dart throw, which was Anthony Richardson, and then Levis goes in round two. That, to me, is a typical quarterback class. You know, the Tua, Justin Herbert class, with Joe Burrow as well, Jalen Hurts and Jordan Love. Jalen Hurts was round two, Jordan Love was round one. To me, this is just a one quarterback class. Which, yeah, so technically, yeah, it's not that top-heavy. It is a down year, I think. I would say the middling guys, the guys that I brought up as the dart throw guys, are all fine prospects. I think they're legitimate day two guys, not even guys you have to squint at to get into day two. It's just that, yeah, it's not as bad as the Pickett class, which I know you guys have talked about that name plenty of times, sure.
Yeah, we have.
It's not as bad as that, because I do think Cam Ward is a prize. Like, I do think he is worthy of being the number one pick, even if I do think he has a couple flaws. But I also just think that the drop-off from him is – there's a two-tier drop-off as opposed to maybe just a one-tier drop-off or someone in the same tier. So there is a drop-off. I say those second day two guys are interesting, though. It's not just where, like, the Pickett class was like – I was high on Desmond Ridder in that class, and I was like, man, I wouldn't take him before pick 50. You know, and it was like – you know, that class was just whatever. These day two dart throws, as I keep describing them, they're more interesting, I think, than that class. So it's not a great class because it's not top heavy, but I will say that the day two guys are interesting.
Dart is an interesting name to say involving this draft. Nate Tice joins us. He's an NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, hosts the Football 301 podcast. Is there a guy who you're talking about as the dart throw in the second day who you think is close enough to Shedeur Sanders in ability that you shouldn't take Shedeur at number two if you're the Browns?
Well, yeah, and that's kind of been my argument for it. So I'll start with Shedeur real quick. Is I view him as a day two guy. He has the upside.
Really? You don't think he's a first-round pick? He'll be a first-round pick.
I don't.
But he will,
and I think that's where everyone's pointing that way, you know, reading the smoke. I don't think he should be a guy that goes before pick 20. That's just how I look at it. I think that his tools aren't what you want in top five, or top 10, or even top 20. And if you have limited tools and limited size, how are you as a processor? How are you from the pocket? Because you're going to have to win that way in the NFL. And Shedeur still needs time. I still think he needs time to work on his polish, still needs time in the pocket. His drifting backwards in the pocket, which I'm sure plenty of people have talked about, is a real issue, because that is a non-negotiable to be an NFL quarterback. You cannot get away with that unless you're an ultimate freak. Jane Daniels can get away with it because he runs a 4.38. You know, Lamar Jackson can get away with it from time to time. He's much better at it than he used to be because he runs a 4.4. Josh Allen used to be able to do it. He doesn't do it as much anymore. Josh Allen is 240 pounds and runs a 4.6. You know, these guys are freaks. And so with Sanders, because I think his tools are more average, adequate, that I get a little worried that you drop him, hey, he's going to be a plug-and-play starter, and we're going to ask him to be a quality starter right away. I think he needs time. And that's not a guy I would take in the top 10. That's a guy I would take in round two. And so starting with Sanders, if I would get, moving off of him, other guys I consider in the same group, the same kind of bucket, The guy that I think has the most arm talent is Tyler Shuck from Louisville. But the problem with him is he's 26. But if you were talking about, if you were making the argument that he's more pro ready and you were taking him on day two, Shuck would be the guy. But again, he's 26 and he has injury history. All these guys have such blemishes that it's so hard to overcome. The guy I'm bullish on is Riley Leonard. Riley Leonard's not a guy I would take until round three. And Leonard, to me, has a lot of tools. And again, getting back to tools, he has toughness. I think he's an excellent athlete. I think he's going to time really well if he runs the 40 this week at his pro day. I think he's a better thrower than people give him credit for. He doesn't have great arm strength. I'd say he has adequate arm strength. But I do think he has touch, and he's improved on his pocket feel and timing. He doesn't take a lot of sacks. Taking sacks is a big issue. And that is, I think people are coming to grips with that taking sacks is as bad as throwing a pick, you know, because they are drive killers. And so if you have a guy that takes a lot of sacks, okay, why does he do that? And that, to me, Sanders' answers to why he takes sacks or why the reason why the process to that is worrisome to me, and I think more worrisome than others are kind of giving it credit for it.
So, Nate, if you're the Browns, you're not taking a quarterback at two. I think I have that right. Would you?
You have that right.
Okay. In that case, right now you have Kenny Pickett and an injured and ineffective Deshaun Watson on your roster. Right. I've thrown out your former teammate Russell Wilson has now signed with the Giants. Jameis Winston has signed with the Giants. There's not a whole lot left. To me, I'm signing Carson Wentz, bringing him in with Pickett and whoever I draft and hoping I have somebody who can help me win some games. Or doing the dance about Kirk Cousins, which doesn't sound realistic to me at this point. What would you do if you were the Browns?
I would be either one of those guys, Wentz or Cousins. I know that's the best of two bad bunches. trust me, I watched Carson Wentz in Week 18 last year with the Chiefs, and it was like, oh yeah, Carson, I remember you. You're the exact same player. It's a tough situation. I wish I had some clean answer and some cool fan fiction answer for you. But to me, looking at the Browns situation, I know desperation is a real thing, and especially where the Browns are at. But man, just looking at the rest of the roster, like the offensive line is going to be all gone after this year. So if you're really drafting, okay, we want a young guy, we want a guy this year, we're going to win this year, I don't know. I feel like you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. As opposed to maybe, hey, we're going to have to reset this thing anyways. So let's be patient and make sure we get our guy. If, you know, of course, Barry and Stefanski have to have the kind of, you know, the timeline to do so. But I do think that it's one of those things where I'd rather wait for a guy than just say, we have to take one. Because that's what leads to bad decisions. That's what leads to Brandon Whedon in the first round. That's what leads to, like, we have to take a guy in the first round. We have to. But then you get into even a worse situation, and then you're giving snaps away because you have to, because that's the guy we took at two overall. So to me, that's like, I would wait till day two and just take a flyer on somebody. And maybe in the second half of the year, you're like, okay, let's start them. Let's see if we got something here. I think that's the situation that the Browns are in, as opposed to like, hey, we drop in a rookie and we compete. So that to me is like, you need a placeholder quarterback. Is Jacoby Brissett still around?
He's gone too.
He's gone too, right?
That's the thing. They've kind of dilly-dallied here, and all these guys who might be options are no longer available. I threw out the name Case Keenum.
That's actually who Tyler Shuck reminds me of, is Case Keenum, if you want a pro comparison. Yeah. I'm very interested in the Brown scouting aspect of this, because they traded for the worst of the Eagles' backup quarterbacks. Tanner McKee is a better quarterback than Kenny Pickett. And that's what was still curious to me, that they ended up trading for Pickett and assets for Pickett as well, because I don't think Pickett's a playable guy other than he run around and get you out of the game. So that was also curious to me. And I've just been waiting to go on a Cleveland show to kind of give that thought that they went maybe for the wrong backup quarterback from Philadelphia.
Thanks.
Thanks for crushing our dreams even more.
No problem, guys. but, you know, it's Abdul Carter, Myles Garrett could be really cool.
Now we're talking. There we go.
That's what I kind of defer to, too, is just like, hey, trade back. Or, you know, you got two BPAs in Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, that I don't think you're making a wrong choice if you do stand pat and don't go quarterback. But I just think that the offensive line situation is a ticking time bomb. So that's another thing I've been keeping my eye on Cleveland, which I also think should influence some of their decisions too.
Yeah, and how strong do you, like, I was going to ask you beyond quarterback, what you think the strongest places are positionally in this draft. And, you know, you talk about O-line, but, I mean, they have a need for a tight end. They have a need for wide receivers. They have, so just kind of, if you could go into the second phase beyond quarterbacks of what you think the strongest position group is after quarterback.
D-line and edge, yeah, is the strength. Top-heavy, middle-tier guys, depth, different flavors. It's a really fun class. You know, maybe a Bill Carter, I wouldn't say the elite prospect. You know, I've heard the generational tag, which should be retired anyways. I think he's more of a very good edge prospect. He doesn't play the run that well. Still has to work on some strength, but he's got stuff that you can't teach. He can bend and get after the quarterback. That gets you paid. And I think he's worthy of a top five pick. So it's not where it's one's like, yeah, he's not Miles Garrett, but he is still a very good prospect. So him and then Mykel Williams from Georgia, more interesting, toolsy guy, I think is better against the run. He's kind of like the inverse of Carter. Very, not as fast, but more explosive and stronger. And he's interesting. Mike Green from Marshall, very twitchy, a very good pass rusher as well. Shamar Stewart tested from Texas A&M, tested off the charts in Indy, which wasn't a surprise to anybody. Big recruit. I'm not as high as him as others. He's a classic traits versus production type of argument, but he's going to get drafted high as well. And those are just edges in the top 15, you know, and then there's a whole bunch of other guys after that. Defensive tackle as well. But then also, it's a good tight end class. You got Tyler Warren from Penn State and Colson Loveland from Michigan will probably go in the first round. But then there's some interesting day two guys. Mason Taylor, I really like from LSU, Jason Taylor's son. Elijah Arroyo from Miami is an interesting day two guy as well, good athlete. And then I actually like the day two receivers, and this is a loaded running back class. That is the position that this class is just juicy with. Ashton Gentry is going to be go high, but then Amarion Hampton from North Carolina is a good player that'll probably go in the first round. It's really seems that way. But then you got, I mean, I have 10 players, 10 running backs with that I think should go in the top 75. I have a late second, early third, you know, that is the cap of it, but I have 10 players and then a couple more that I think are interesting. So this class, if you need a running back, which is kind of like Cleveland's like, okay, what's enough running backs. but I do think that this is a really loaded running back class as well. And I also think it's an interesting day two offensive lineman class, not top heavy, but I do think there's a lot of guys late first, second round types that maybe are more interesting, good starter types, kind of tweeners. You have to figure out, get them into the right home. But there's a lot more interesting body types than maybe this offensive line class has been getting credit for.
Nate Tice joining us, writer for Yahoo Sports podcast, Football 301. So if you're the Browns and you're sitting at two, you mentioned Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, Mason Graham, trade down. What would you do if you're running the Browns?
I would check with everyone. Anybody want to trade up for Shadur? New York? Hey, anybody? You know, I would be working the phones as much as possible, because you mentioned right before you even asked me that question, the Browns, your co-host did, but the Browns, they have so many holes or they have so much need. Well, let's get some more picks. And I also just mentioned that it's interesting, though, because this class, there's no consensus in this class, which I think is really fun, because yeah, it's not maybe the aces of last year's class, you know, all the other positions, like true blue chippers, more very good prospects as opposed to those true elite ones. But I think that's interesting. I think you could get buyers as far as moving up in the class, because you don't know who's going to fall in love with what player. You might, you being a team, go, I think that guy shouldn't go so before pick 20. And another team might go, that's the next this guy. We're moving up to take him. You know, call the Saints. Get them to try to move up, you know, and stay in the top 10, you know, a team that can be aggressive and trying to find their guys, quote unquote. That'd be my first option. My second option would be go with Abdul Carter, as much as I really like Travis Hunter. I do view Travis Hunter as a corner. I knew Barry views him as a receiver. I view him as a corner more for size reasons and also the mental workload of, you know, playing receiver and then spotting at corner, I think is just too much. I think playing corner and spotting at receiver is a much easier mental workload for a player coming into the NFL. If they took him, I totally get that as well. But I view him as a corner because of the weight stuff. He's not over 190, and I don't want to get into the historical things because I'm saving it for an article. But there's more Thanks. Corners sub 190 or below that become Pro Bowlers and All Pros than 190 or below receivers. I think there's only been two All Pro receivers that weighed below 190 in the last 35 years, and there's been eight corners. There's only been eight receivers that have been Pro Bowl receivers that weighed below 190. There's been 26 corners. So it's just a weight threshold thing there. But long answer, trade Abdul Carter, just because I prefer trenches, and I maybe just as a fan of the NFL, just want to envision Myles Garrett and Abdul Carter wrecking offenses for the next decade.
There you go.
Half decade at the very least. So make a strength your real strength. And maybe because I've seen what Cleveland's done with Za'Darius Smith and Okoronkwo over there, and I've seen the glimpses of what that could look like, why not get another ace in there and just become one of the most unblockable defensive lines in the NFL? That's kind of what my deferred argument has become.
Nate, great to have you with us. And if you're willing, we'd love to have you back. So thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nate.
No, appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Nate Tice, NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, his podcast, Football 301. And he joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Welcome back to Baskin and Phelps. Jeff Phelps, Andy Baskin. Opening day, baby. Opening day.
So excited.
We have some opening day stuff. We also have some Nate Tice stuff. We also have another opening day roster. All straight ahead here on Baskin and Phelps.
All right. The latest draft rumors around the Browns will only intensify as we continue to talk about them endlessly, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the Cavs are on their way to locking down the number one seed in the East, and the Guardians' regular season is here. Today, feel it. Don't miss a minute of The Fan during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 923thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app.
Stuff is happening. Tanner Bibee, opening day starter for our Cleveland Guardians.
Oh, no.
Oops. Not the opening day starter for the Cleveland Guardians. And the reason why? Food poisoning.
Ugh.
Better than an elbow.
No, that's true. All right, good point on that.
Better than an elbow.
Jeff, you do see the glasses half full.
Andy,
so
it's the way to go through life, my man.
What? Half empty or half full?
I don't know. Not looking at all the negative. It's better for you.
Oh, boy.
It's better for you.
Food poisoning, huh?
And instead of Tanner Bibee, now we get Ben Lively. So, Ben, there you go. Knock him dead. In Kansas City, 4-10.
It's bad for... Oh, who knows what he ate, but... Oh, what a bummer.
Yeah, he wanted to do that, and now he's not going to get a chance to do that.
So if you put Lively in there, what are you doing to the rotation here now?
Well, you're waiting until Tanner Bibee's gastro problems go away, and then you put him on the field.
Well, you got to figure he'd be back for his next regular scheduled start, don't you think?
Well, you would think so, sure.
Yeah, so...
Guardians also made some corresponding moves here. They had an open spot on the roster. They have filled it by recalling Jonathan Rodriguez from AAA Columbus. And if you remember Jonathan, he came up last year before John Kenzie Noel, I believe, and was a hard-hitting right fielder. And so I have another hard-hitting guy. I love that. Nolan Jones, John Kenzie Noel, Jonathan Rodriguez, some guys who can mash the ball if they make contact. So that's good. They've put Shane Bieber, Slade Ciccone, John Means, Eric Sobrowski, Trevor Stephan on the 15-day injured list, retroactive to March 24th. Those are all expected moves. And then they reassigned, and these are expected as well. Kobe Allard, Parker Mashinsky, Vince Velasquez, Dom Nunez, and Will Wilson to minor league camp. So a 26-player roster. 10 players on that 26-man roster acquired through the MLB draft by the Guardians. 7 through trades. 9 free agents, 3 of those amateur free agents, 6 major league free agents. 40-man roster sits at 40.
And there you have it.
Let's play ball, baby. Andy?
Jeff?
I've been going over some of these opening day lineups, just to kind of get us in the feel for what's going on.
Let's get pumped.
This one is going to be very near and dear to your heart. You know why? Because you bring this year up frequently enough.
Uh-oh.
The year is 1987.
Oh.
And I've gone over opening day lineups from key years in franchise history. Why is 1987 a key year?
Was that an uprising year?
Yes, it was.
Oh, yes.
Sports Illustrated on the cover in 1987, predicting the Indians as the best team in the American League.
Why?
The best team in the American League, according to Sports Illustrated, ended up going 61-101 under Pat Corrales and Doc Edwards.
And why? Because weren't they the only team of the, what was there, seven in the American League East at the time? All six teams had won the previous 6 years.
Well, they...
Something
all,
like that?
They also had a good year the year before. But the opening day lineup against the Toronto Blue Jays, April 6th, 1987, at Exhibition Stadium in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, for a team that disappointed us immensely. Your second baseman was Tony Bernazard. In center field, Brett Butler hitting second. Your shortstop, Julio Franco, hitting third. Joe Carter was in left field batting cleanup. My favorite guy back in the day, Andre Thornton, the DH, hitting fifth. Andre, if you're listening, have a great opening day.
We both love you, just so you know that.
Brooke Jacoby,
still fans.
Brooke Jacoby hit sixth and played third base. Pat Tabler hit seventh and played first. Corey Snyder was in right field. Corey went 1-for-3 that day with an RBI. Corey hit one out, I believe.
Tell him who
game.
Was behind home plate.
Oh, no, he didn't. Yes. Oh, yes, he did. Yeah, Corey hit one out. And behind home plate, the pride of Solon High School.
Yes!
Chris Bando.
You go.
That was your starting lineup. Mel Hall pinch hit in that game.
Your
pitchers in that game. Tom Candiotti, the starter for the Guards, or Indians at the time, coming out of the bullpen and pitching in the sixth inning. Some guy that was washed up who they kind of tried to reclaim. A fellow named Doug Jones, who did get good, didn't he? Man. Scott Bales then pitched the seventh inning. And Tom Waddell pitched the ninth, or Waddle. So that was your starting lineup in the ungodly disappointing 1987 season for opening day.
By the way, Sal Bando, rest his soul, 2 years ago. Passed away in 23. Is that something? Yep. 2023. He was in Wisconsin.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Opening day. We'll have more coming up. Ben Broussard, actually.
Yeah.
Going to join us coming up in just a few minutes.
Are we
going to
do his opening day?
Are we going to do his opening day?
Yeah.
I don't think we are.
Oh, you take all the fun out of it. Here I was excited. We go through history, looking at all his opening days. And now you're going to spoil the fun.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks.
I appreciate that.
Man, you're a roadblock sometimes.
You okay here? Oh, Dano's got something.
No, more?
A little bit of news here, Adam Schefter. Of ESPN, edge rusher top prospect Abdul Carter will not work out at Penn State's pro day on Friday, per his agent Drew Rosenhaus. Quote, he's still finishing up rehab on the shoulder injury he had from the Boise State game.
Yeah.
Rosenhaus said he may still do a workout for teams sometime in mid-April. So Abdul Carter not working out at Penn State's pro day.
Well, they only want to give you millions of dollars. It might be nice if they had a better idea.
It's a good point. He's also probably skipping out because Penn State plays Maine tomorrow in the College Hockey Sweet 16. So that might be why, too. He wants to watch
He played first base for the Guardians. He played first base for the McNeese State Cowboys. He's from Southeast Texas. He's Ben Broussard, and he's coming up next right here on Baskin and Phelps. We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Maybe this guy can tell us who was singing that song. He was a hard slugging first baseman for our Indians back in the early 2000s. Before that, he was a McNeese State Cowboy. Before that, the pride of Hardin Jefferson High School in Sour Lake, Texas. He's Ben Broussard. Ben, welcome to our show.
I got goosebumps.
What's up, guys?
How are you, Ben?
Who was singing that?
Man, that was me. It was kind of a double meaning song. It was about, like, you know, hitting balls deep and then also being deep in love. So I kind of like to try to combo that.
Nice. Good to have you with us, man. How have you been?
Yeah, man. Man, I've been great. It's been a really fun time, you know, getting out of baseball, doing lots of different things, and you know, excited about getting back to Cleveland and getting a chance to maybe be a part. And watch these guys that you guys have there just dominate the Central.
You're going to be doing some television this year with the Guardians TV on MLB. Yeah. Are you excited?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super excited. It's something that I've always been interested in, and I got an opportunity to be a part of it this year. So I'm excited. I'll be on in, I think, August. So I have a couple series and really just trying to learn. It's something that I've never done. I always enjoyed when I was a player doing media stuff and interviews and good friends with like Andy and all the guys there. And, you know, it was a good opportunity. So I was excited to jump on it.
Oh, Ben, we didn't teach you anything when you were here outside of playing baseball. We tried to get you ready. I always remember you played House of Blues once, didn't you, while you were here too? And then, did you play? Didn't you have one? You did a concert up on the outfield wall didn't you?
Yeah, it was. You know, it was tricky being a musician and a baseball player because you know the perception of it could be like you're distracted. But you know, for me, it was like I would try to explain that to people. It was kind of what kept me, you know, even keel every day. Whether you know I got four hits or no hits, I knew I could go and, you know, pull the guitar out and play and write songs. And then my teammates loved it. So we just had, you know, like got a chance to do a few albums over the years. And most of those songs were, you know, I was testing them out on my teammates and, you know, airplanes and bus rides and in hotel rooms when guys are playing cards. And so, you know, it's great when I hear those songs. Like I remember that song deep and just like playing it for my teammates, you know, right before I put it out. And, you know, people have asked me that before. They've said, "Hey, what's the best moment you ever had in baseball?" And I think it goes back to probably, you know, it was like August in 2005, and we were doing a CD release party, and I wasn't playing that game. I went in to play defense at the end of the game, and we were winning by one, and the concert's supposed to start at 10:30, and I remember the team comes back, and we go into extra innings, and I'm looking at the clock, and all the guys know what's going on. You know, they're kind of laughing because, of course, this is how baseball works, right? And I'm getting an opportunity to go up and hit. And I remember I looked at them, and I never did this. This is the only time I ever think I did this. But I looked at them, and I was like, guys, I got a concert to play. I'm about to win this thing. And I went up there, and got a good pitch to hit and hit a walk-off. So
nice.
I remember it was
super, super cool to, you know, be able to win the game, rush the concert, and then all the fans were so excited. A bunch of them, you know, went to the concert after so that we sold the House of Blues out. I mean, there was a line going down the street, and, you know, it was just like, it was the coolest night to be able to kind of incorporate all that into one.
I always, like, I remember you get on the plane with the guitar, just with your guitar, and then every once in a while I would laugh. I would think about that scene from the movie Airplane, where the woman hits everybody in the head with their guitar case, and then all of a sudden you're singing and you knock the IV out of the little girls. I used to laugh. I used to think about that. I'm like, man, I hope Ben doesn't hit anybody in the head when he gets on there.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, I remember I used to kind of keep a little – I had like a journal, and I would always kind of like write down when people would do stuff that was kind of funny, like something that you could kind of rag them about later. And then there would always be these opportunities in the back of the plane, you know, to be like, hey, Ben, play us a song. And I would, like, just kind of write up a song, like, real quick on the spot. And I would, you know, I'd already kind of know something that happened, like, a month ago that, like, no one really said anything about. And so in the song, I would throw it in there, and everybody would start laughing, and they would be like, man, how did you remember that? And I'd always act like I just remembered it, but they didn't know that, you know, I was, like, kind of always writing down stuff because it was just good ammo to pull out every once in a while to, you know, it's real easy to get, you know, super tight and stressed out. So it was one of those things, I think, that kind of brought us together, and we tried to, you know, reset and get ready for the next game.
Yeah, and a lot cheaper than losing your mail money playing blackjack, too. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I was terrible at cards. So that was always like, I love being a part of those games, but I love to be like entertainment. So, yeah, I wasn't very good at cards.
So you were basically the guy with the guitar sitting on the steps in Animal House, and Belushi smashed it and then said sorry.
I gave my love
around
Jerry,
the clubhouse.
Right?
Yeah.
It was interesting. You know, it was tough. You know, sometimes I had to explain myself to a lot of people, like, you know, management and different people would ask me, like, what are you doing putting an album out? I was like, well, it wasn't something that I was really planning. I just got the opportunity, and I had some songs, and I put the album out, and, you know, it didn't have anything to do with me not being, like, focused or, you know, ready to show up the next day and play. But a lot of times, you know, guys would be like, you want to be a musician? And I'm like, no, I've always been a musician. I'm just, you know, trying to survive up here in the big leagues. It's really hard.
I'm the guy who co-hosted with Andy on Home Games, who worked at Channel 4 in Beaumont, by the way. And I wear my Beaumont Golden Gator shirt and my Lamar University shirt here, and Andy just gives me grief.
He's ridiculous about it. Ridiculous.
So were you there when Benito Santiago was there back in the day?
Man. Benito and Sandy and all those guys. Yeah.
Man, it was amazing. That's some really good players that went through there when I was younger.
It was really true. What about this team? You look at the Guardians this year. Ben, I got to be honest. We're sitting here thinking, okay, they surprised us last year. We kind of think they're going to have to surprise us again. Do you think that's the case, or do you think this team's ready to roll?
Yeah, I definitely think the team's ready to roll. I think you guys, like, they did such a good job of getting, you know, great leadership, having a young manager come in and do what he did. And I think they do a great job of using, like, all the information that we have. And, I had the opportunity to be, like, in player development for quite a few years with the White Sox. And I was around that. And it was kind of when all that stuff was starting to happen. And one of the hardest things as a player is to have all this information and figure out the right information to concentrate on. You know, not going up to the plate as a hitter, you know, thinking through the four pitches that the guy has and the percentage that he might throw it, but being able to really go up there and, like, have a plan and kind of be the predator, not the prey. And I felt like the Guardians did a great job of that. I think they do a great job of that. Definitely, you know, on the pitching side, but then you saw it last year, just, you know, how they – great defense. Just all the recipes of what you see in the postseason every year, where you see the teams that play good defense, they pitch well, they run the bases the right way, they don't make those mistakes. And I think that they have a track record of doing that. So I'm not really that worried about it. I feel like, you know, they're just developing and getting stronger and stronger.
Ben, what goes through your mind when you think about opening day? Like, nerves, yeah, what do you think about when I say the words opening day to you?
Yeah, excitement. You know, I think everyone's, you know, you've just been ramping up, you know, for spring training, and you obviously want to time it right, where you're, like, as a hitter, you're hot and you're locked in at the end of spring training. Not like, there's been times I remember being, like, really hot in the beginning and cooling off towards the end, and then you're trying to find it again, you know, and it's a confidence thing. And so for me, it was excitement. It was just like, okay, it's time. It's ready. You know, now it really counts. And then, you know, all the guys are sitting around there looking at the team, and they're thinking, hey, we're going to be really good. And then now you got to kind of see how it's going to play out.
Ben Broussard joining us. You're going to see Ben doing some Guardians TV work coming up later on this summer. The way the game has evolved, Ben, the haves and the have-nots, salary-wise, is something that I can't get out of my head. Yet the Guardians have been able to figure out how to compete and do a really nice job. You mentioned you work in the White Sox organization for a while. What is it that the Guardians do organizationally that allows them to compete without spending with the Yankees and the Dodgers and some of the other top teams, money-wise?
Well, I think that's the question that everybody wants to know, you know, because it's hard to do that, especially, you know, in today's game. There's great players. I think they're able to identify guys, you know, and they're able to get a lot out of guys young earlier in their careers. You know, I think that's when, you know, as guys play, you know, every day you have in the big leagues, it's like you know, there's a clock, and eventually you're a free agent. And if you're a good player, you're really expensive. And I think the Guardians have just done a great job of developing guys, developing great pitching, and they're able to put, you know, quality players out there and not have to pay them the max that a lot of other teams are having to do.
Hey, Ben, just real quick, as you go around the league, and Jeff and I were talking about this, like, one-third of the managers in the league right now had some kind of a tie to the Indians organization. Either they played here or they came up through the front office. Is there anywhere you can ever go where you don't run into somebody that had something to do with this organization?
That's crazy. You're right. I mean, I see it all over. I think it just goes back to, you know, probably coming out of the 90s and being, like, as strong as a team as they were. And then when I got to come in for the rebuild, and we had a lot of really good young players, but I think that we also had a lot of really good young front office people that came in. And I think that, like, Mark Shapiro and, you know, all the people under him did a good job of, like, developing those guys. And then, you know, they just kind of spread out and end up, you know, making their own path with other organizations.
Ben, great to have you with us and great to catch up a little bit. We look forward to watching you doing some Guardians TV on the MLB production coming up this summer. We'd love to have you back when you get close to that. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Super excited. Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
Ben Broussard joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.